These blasphemous texts are the Necronomicon. It was written by the mad Arab Al-Hazraj himself and was found in the possession of a desert-dwelling Sufi tribe in Upper Egypt. It contains forbidden knowledge and unholy incantations. You have been warned. The Grimoire of the Old Ones. The Grimoire of Cthulhu. Cthulhu flew on his vast leathern wings across the gulf of space to conquer and rule this world. He had no other purpose. He revels in combat, warfare, bloodshed, and death. Conquest is his way, and the way of his spawn, who are like him in their general appearance, but smaller. Whereas Cthulhu is as large as a mountain, his spawn a little bigger than horses or cows. They also possess wings for flying through the air, and through the dark emptiness of space. They are said to resemble the octopus, but this is true only of their heads, which are hung in the front of their faces with tentacles that lift and writhe about in the air. For they are all by nature dwellers on the surface of the earth and in the air. It is only misadventure that casts them below the waves of the sea, which they loathe and despise with a passionate hatred. For this water prevents them from sending forth their thoughts across the face of the world to control those who worship them. When Cthulhu descended from between the stars to the dreaming earth, he found it ruled by the Elder Things, an ancient race possessing deep wisdom that also came to this world from the stars. But long before the coming of Cthulhu and his spawned army, Cthulhu thought to easily destroy the Elder Things, but to his amazement and dismay he found their arts of warfare equal to his own. His spawn swept against their slaves that are called Shoggoths, the way an ocean wave sweeps toward the rocks of the shore, and it broke upon them just as a wave breaks and falls back in frustration. The Shoggoth is the strongest creature that has ever lived, and deathless. Not even the spawn could prevail against them. To end the war more quickly, the Elder Things were gracious and ceded to Cthulhu and his spawn the newly risen lands of the Pacific Ocean that formed chains of islands. With these, the war god was content to bide his time, for he never ceased to plot the overthrow of the Elder Things and the conquest of this entire world. He and his spawn, which are smaller buddings of himself from his own body, sent forth their thoughts into the dreams of the other thinking creatures of the earth, bringing them into subjugation and servitude. Until all worshipped Cthulhu as a god, including the hairy ape-like beings that would later become men. Alas for Cthulhu, the stars changed their pattern in the heavens and sent down poisonous rays to vex him. He used his magic to place his spawn and himself into a sleep that was like death. But in his dreams, he continued to send forth his thoughts and to rule his worshippers. A second disaster struck, one unforeseen in spite of all his wisdom and ancient experience. The island of Relier sank beneath the waves to the bottom of the sea with Cthulhu and all his spawn locked within their stone houses, dreaming their strange dreams. The mass of water held back his thoughts and the thoughts of the spawn. There was no way to call his worshippers to release him should the stars come right once again in the heavens. So Cthulhu and his spawn continue to lie on sunken Relier, deep beneath the waves, almost forgotten by men, but dreaming still of warfare and conquest. Statues of Cthulhu, carved from green stone that is not native to this world, reveal the strange shape of the dreaming god. He has a massive, bulging head that is soft and pulsing on the top, with six small eyes on the front, and below them a tangle of slender, writhing tentacles resembling a nest of serpents that conceals his mouth. From his back hang his enormous wings, like those of a bat that are folded close. His body is like the body of a man, corpulent and of solid frame, but his hands and feet end in claws that are longer than the tusks of the greatest elephant. His flesh is said by those who claim to have glimpsed it in dreams to be like cloudy green glass that lets light pass through, and similar to jelly beneath the touch. But when it is cut, it heals itself almost instantly and reforms. No injury of a normal kind can harm Cthulhu or his spawn. They are deathless, since they do not live as we know life. Those men who worship him have formed a cult in the far corners of the world and passed down the ancient knowledge of Relier. They worship his statues, but their priests receive no instruction from him, except at rare times when the gate of Yog-Sothoth opens upon Relier, and they travel to the sunken citadel of their mighty lord and hold communication with him in their dreaming minds. Then does Cthulhu instruct them in the rites of his cult. He tells them to wait and watch for the stars to come right in their courses, and for Relier to rise, for these are the signals that the time of slaying is come upon the world again, as it was before the making of man by the Elder Things. The worship of Cthulhu lends courage and skill in warfare and all forms of battle. In dreams, Cthulhu teaches ancient wisdom and ancient magic, for he is the high priest of the Old Ones and well learned in all their alien arts. Only Nyarlathotep has greater wisdom, but the crawling chaos seldom teaches men matters of great value. Cthulhu is generous to his worshippers. He needs them to come and release him and his spawn from their stone houses once Relier rises above the waves. He teaches them the joys of battle and the greater joys of slaying. His cult is fearless and without mercy or kindness. They gladly kill the innocent and embrace death as a lover. Use this seal of the war god to reach him in the depths of your dreams, or when you project your astral form beneath the waves to sunken Relier, where you may hold communication with Cthulhu as he sleeps. The sphere of the heavens most in harmony with his warlike nature is the sphere of Mars. All things martial are suited to form a part of his worship and his rites. Of all the Old Ones, he most delights in sacrifices of blood. It is possible to invoke a shadow of his mind, and in this way take on the fierceness and mercilessness of the warrior god and his spawn. This is useful in achieving victory in battle or in contests. Cthulhu cannot bear to lose any contest. He cannot bear to decline any challenge. The magic square of the sphere of Mars and the sigil formed from the name of Cthulhu upon that square are both useful instruments in seeking the aid or teachings of the dreaming god. His natural way among the six directions of space is the south, because its fiery nature accords with his lust for war. A final word of warning. It is possible to invoke a shadow of Cthulhu's mind into your own mind, and in this way take on the force of will, the fearlessness, the aggression, and warlike virtues of the god. But consider well before you attempt this, for Cthulhu glories in slaying and death, and is not fastidious about whom he slays. The Old Ones were, the Old Ones are, and the Old Ones shall be. Great is their favor toward those who serve them, but greater still their malice against their foes. They walk the earth when the walls between worlds weaken and the gates of Yog-Sothoth swing wide. At twilight they walk, and in the mists of morning before the ascent of the sun. When moon and sun cross paths on the dragon's head, and again on the dragon's tail, they walk. Upon the equinoxes they walk while the seasons of the year hang in balance. Corn is pressed down in the fields where they pass, and trees torn up by their roots. The ground shakes with the rumble of distant thunder, and the air is sharp with the stench of burning brimstone. By this odor may you know them when they pass near, for no eye can see their unnatural flesh without the aid of sorcery. They are not of this world, but of higher worlds, and extend themselves downward into our space, the way a man reaches into the depths of a pool. No fish swimming beneath the surface can know when or where the hand will enter the water, or the place it goes when it is withdrawn. Nor does the shape of the hand reveal the greater form of the creature to which it is joined. By their tracks on the sands also shall you know them. Legs thick as the trunks of mighty oaks bear up bodies vaster than the largest beast, yet end in five small pads that press into the ground the pattern of a pentalpha. The Old Ones possess the power of flight, not by means of wings, for wings they have none, but by lifting their great bodies upward into the air with the force of their thoughts alone. They are blind in normal vision, and aeons before the rise of the race of man they dwelt in great cities behind stone walls that lacked windows. Yet they possess senses unnatural to this world that inform them of their surroundings. Few sages have glimpsed them by alchemy or art magic, but those few who dare to write on this forbidden matter declare their bodies to be an ovoid mass of writhing tendrils. Long ago the Old Ones made war against a time-spanning race from a world called Yith. Great is the power of the Old Ones, but greater still was the science of Yith, for all knowledge both past and future lay open to them. The Yithians banished to exile beneath the ground all those Old Ones who had dwelt on the surface of this world in windowless stone cities, sealing the entrances to their caverns with massive doors of black stone. There were other Old Ones, not of the cities, who took no part in the war, but fled into the heavens through the gates of Yog-Sothoth. The Yithians made no attempt to pursue them. In this way, the Old Ones were divided. Those bound to this world by the craft of the Yithians endure below, deep under the ruins of the bygone cities of the Time Lords. But the Old Ones who did not take part in the war continue to dwell in the airy heights between this world and the higher worlds. Only now and then, when the walls between worlds thin and the gates gape, do they descend to walk in wild places as of old, unseen and unknown. They cannot long tolerate the surface of this world, for with the passage of eons the stars have gone wrong in the sky and send down rays poisonous to the alien flesh of the Old Ones. Their old foes, the Yithians, have departed into the future, but the Old Ones are unable to claim their heritage until the stars complete their helical turnings and once more come right in the heavens, as they were of old. Then will the gates of Yog-Sothoth open wide, and the Old Ones descend from the sky and ascend from their crypts to rebuild their windowless cities upon the ruins that remain, and rule this world and all that subsist upon it. Men shall become their slaves, as they were when mighty Cthulhu cast his thoughts across land and sea into their dreams before Relier sank beneath the waves. Long have the Old Ones who dwell in the heights sought to breed in the wombs of mortal women hybrids that can tolerate the poison of the stars. To those who aid them in this purpose, they grant occult knowledge and power over other men. Sometimes these hybrid offspring resemble their fathers and walk the earth vast and invisible, while others favor their mothers and wear shapes that approximate the human body. They lack purpose until inhabited by the minds of the dwellers in the heights, and then they seek to fulfill the great labor of the Old Ones, the work of the Trapezohedron. The reason for which that race traveled across the vasts of space and through many dimensions of reality to reside on this globe. The children of men who aid them in their work are rewarded. Those who hinder them are punished. By the long chant of the Necronomicon is the gate of Yog-Sothoth opened, and the way laid bare for the Old Ones to descend into their prepared vessels of lower flesh, both those of mixed blood and those wholly human. Only mortals who have prepared themselves are worthy to carry for a time the spirits of the Old Ones and serve their great work of restoration, the elevation of the fallen Queen of Heaven to her empty throne. No mortal possessed by an Old One can bear the presence of that spirit for more than a cycle of the moon without madness. They are ancient beyond reckoning, and their alien thoughts are not wholesome to the minds of men, but rot the tissues of the brain and render them down to a putrid slime. Great in the heavens are the Old Ones, low in the dust is man, but higher than mankind are those men who dedicate themselves in service to the great work of the Old Ones. The cleansing of this world that will alone restore her purity and allow her elevation back to her former high estate, from which she fell into this pit, where she is ceaselessly defiled by life. The Fallen Earth. Before the glistening effluvium of this universe spilled forth from the cosmic egg, the globe upon which we dwell was the goddess Barbalzoa, beloved and only daughter of he whose true name may not be spoken, but who is called in the tongue of the Old Ones, as it is used among our race, Azathoth. She sat upon the left hand of the throne of creation, and her beauty and wisdom were the twin shining stars of her eyes, so resplendent that no shadow could endure to approach to the throne. The music of her father's flute trilled forth with pure harmonies, and the 12 gigantic gods who dance upon empty space about the throne, sustaining the web of realities with their measured steps, continued with grace and decorum. The trilling notes of the flute spiraled outward, unsullied, and brought forth a universe filled with bright stars. The chief messenger and soul of the dancing gods, who is named Nyarlathotep in the tongue of the Old Ones, as it is used by men, looked upon Barbalzoa from his throne seat at the right hand of Azathoth, and he desired to possess her purity. Behind the back of her father, he took the virgin goddess by force, in a way that is not like the way of men, but is without the joining of flesh. He gained nothing by his treachery, for her brightness died within his darkness, and left behind it only a bitterness on his tongue. In her shame, the goddess could not bear to face wise Azathoth on his throne, who could see into all hearts. She cast herself despairing down from the mount of the triple wisdom seat, down the 93 steps and over the edge of the abyss into the wilderness of stars. The lower she fell, the more of her shining substance turned to dull and solid matter. Nyarlathotep pursued her like a stooping dragon, She heard his cry of rage in her mind and pressed her transformed body of dense matter around herself to conceal her shining nature. Tighter and tighter, she wrapped her solidifying form around herself so that she became a globe no different in outward features from millions of other globes that revolve around the stars spun forth on the music of her father's flute. The weight of matter pressing upon her soul sent her into a deep sleep that is like death. This she did not anticipate, but she could not escape it. In this sleep she dreams, and watches in her dreams what transpires upon the surface of the sphere that is her material body, but she never remembers her true name, or how she cast herself from a high estate down through the gateways of many dimensions into this hellish plane. When Azathoth learned of Barbalzoa's plunge into the depths of matter, his grief drove him mad. With his own fingernails he raked out his eyes, and in sympathy the 12 dancing gods became blind. His flute shrieked and cracked, so that it no longer gave forth pure notes, but forever after made music that was imperfect. He tore off his fine robes and squatted naked and disheveled on his throne, which turned black from the blackness of his despair. He forgot himself in madness. His hair became matted, his body clotted with his own filth. He could not cease to play his flute, for that is his very reason to exist. But the music that came forth was disordered, and caused the dancing of the 12 blind gods to stumble and falter. The creations that arose from their dance were flawed. After measureless ages of searching the length and breadth of the cosmos, Nyarlathotep found the sphere of Barbalzoa, circling a small but ancient yellow star, far removed from the center of creation. In spite of all his arts, he failed to awaken her from her dreaming slumber at the center of this world. He called upon the servants of his kind, who are known as the Old Ones, to raise this sphere from the pit of matter to the high seat from which she had fallen. But the Old Ones were frustrated by the countless forms of life that had arisen to inhabit the lands and seas of its surface. So much corporeal life could not be lifted through the highest gate. Nyarlathotep then commanded that the surface of the earth be wiped clean of all life, but before the Old Ones could fulfill his command, they were attacked by the time travelers from Yith, who are wisest of all races in the universe and potent in warfare. The Old Ones were defeated and their forces split, some imprisoned in caverns beneath the ground and others sheltering themselves between the spheres of the heavens behind the sealed gates of Yog-Sothoth. Before they could reunite their forces, the stars went wrong in the heavens and the colors of their conjoined rays became poisonous to the alien flesh of the Old Ones. The Yithians departed into the distant future, but the Old Ones remain, trapped by the stars and by time itself. The great work of the Old Ones is to sterilize this world of all life, purifying it so that it is made fit to elevate through the highest gate of Yog-Sothoth. Matter may with some awkwardness pass through the lower gates, but so much matter cannot be elevated through the final gate to the throne of creation. Only living matter that has become mingled with the substance of the Old Ones, and in this way transformed into hybrids, half of humanity and half of the Old Ones, becomes fit for this transition. This intermingling may be accomplished not merely through the mingling of flesh, but through the mind and soul, which have the power to purify the body. Nyarlathotep rages. He holds the mad Azathoth in contempt, but cannot kill him and take his place on the highest seat of the Black Throne of Chaos, for if the flute of Azathoth ceased to trill its notes, and the 12 blind gods halted their dance, everything would come to an end in darkness and silence, even Nyarlathotep himself. He cannot possess the goddess Barbalzoa, for she is protected by her armor of dense matter, formed from her own solidified body, which has become her prison and perhaps her tomb. Nyarlathotep strides across the sands of this world in the shape of a man, and he rages and schemes how to raise this globe with its shining core up to the place from which it fell, so that the goddess shall be released. First, he must restore the ride of the Old Ones upon the earth. This he seeks to accomplish through the use of human agents, and other agents who dwell in the deep places of the world that are not human. Yog-Sothoth aids him in his work, but not always willingly, for Yog-Sothoth did not approve of the violation of the goddess. Yog-Sothoth loves order and harmony, and laments its loss. He aids Nyarlathotep in the hope that harmony will be restored to the cosmos when Barbalzoa awakens. But he is no friend to Nyarlathotep, and will act to frustrate the messenger of the dancing gods when opportunity presents itself. Men and women who are wise serve Nyarlathotep, for his service is the royal road to wealth and power, and to forbidden knowledge of the lost arts of magic. Yet they never fail to give honor to Yog-Sothoth, who is the gate through which all travelers must pass. Even more do they honor Mad Azathoth, who is the source of all power, including that of Nyarlathotep and Yog-Sothoth. Remember this and be wise. Yog-Sothoth opens the gate, Nyarlathotep shows the way, but Azathoth on his black throne, at the center of the chaos his madness has created, is the fulfillment of the quest. When the fallen Babalzoa awakens and is restored to the left hand of her father, his madness will end and true service will be remembered. The Grimoire of Azathoth. Azathoth is the leader of the 12 dancing gods, the greatest of these archons, and the creator of our universe, which is formed on the nothingness of space itself from intervals of sound and silence. Before the fall of his daughter Babalzoa, who in her self-chosen exile became this earthly sphere, he piped forth the fabric of creation with elegant and stately harmonies that became beautiful things. But his grief at the loss of his daughter drove him mad, and in his drooling idiocy his music is shrill with discordances and becomes things that are imperfect. The left-hand seat of the triple throne remains vacant. The gods continue to dance, but their steps falter and hesitate. The blind idiot god on his black throne is still the source of all that occurs. Nothing can be done without his approval, but in his madness he gives it capriciously. Nyarlathotep on the right-hand seat of the triple throne rages at his own impotence, for no matter how vast his ambition and his lust for power, he is dependent on the approval of Azathoth, and without it he remains impotent. By lies and tricks and beguilements he wins the favor of the idiot god, who pipes the dark purposes of Nyarlathotep into being, without considering the consequences of his plots. Witches and wizards carried through the gates of Yog-Sothoth in dreams to the foot of the Black Throne, by Nyarlathotep, claim that Azathoth has the shape of a corpulent man, deformed and stunted like a dwarf, but many times the size of the tallest giant that dwells in our sphere. His face is compressed and misshapen, his blind eyes are pits that ooze mucus, his blubbery lips drool as he pipes his cracked flute of bone. Rolls of fat hang down his filthy chest, and his matted black hair dangles across his rounded shoulders. His skin is grey, for he has long dwelled in darkness. The 12 who dance around the throne upon the air issue forth sighing breaths of sorrow as they pass, lamenting for the old times of beauty and light. All these forms are no more than appearances glimpsed in dreams, for no man has stood before the throne in his own flesh and lived to tell of it. Nyarlathotep carries up the souls of those who swear to do him service, so that their names can be confirmed in the great book that is kept beneath the black throne, the book that is called the Necronomicon. Their bodies he does not carry up, for the fiery heat of the center of all creation and destruction would strip the flesh from their bones and leave them no more than ashes ground under the feet of the dancing gods. There is a secret teaching that declares Azathoth to be the very vortex at the center of chaos from which all emerged and into which all returns. His music is said to be no more than the eternal howling of this maelstrom, and that all who venture near it are drawn in and consumed as though by a hungry mouth, without discrimination as to rank or kind. The universe itself is said to be no more than excrement cast forth from the anus of the naked idiot god, which in the fullness of time he will consume in his madness, and thus repeat the cycle of creation and destruction. The true name of Azathoth is known to but a few, and is not to be spoken aloud, for to speak his true name is to invoke his confirmation of whatever is willed, either for good or ill. His true name is the pattern of all creation. In his madness he gives his fiat capriciously, so that those who invoke his approval oftentimes wish they had remained silent. Even Nyarlathotep invokes the name of Azathoth with dread, never knowing if it will enable his purposes or frustrate them, and always gnashing his teeth at the necessity to seek the force of realization for his judgments from the idiot god. For it is only the music of Azathoth that makes or destroys. His madness renders Azathoth unpredictable and causes all magics to be uncertain in their efficacy. The true name of Azathoth is called the Tetractes among Greek philosophers, but is known as the Tetragrammaton in the Greek tongue among the Hebrews. It is represented by 10 dots in 4 rows, arranged in the form of a triangle with a single dot in the top row, 2 in the row beneath, 3 in the third row, and 4 in the final row, so that they define a triangle with equal sides. However, the Tetractes is only half of the mystery of the name. The full mystery is revealed when a second Tetractes is inverted and laid over the first, so that a figure is defined by the resulting 13 dots that has the shape of a star with 6 points. The top row has 1 dot, but the second either 2 or 4, depending on which of the interlocking triangles is favored. The third row 3 dots, the fourth row either 2 or 4, depending on which triangle is brought foremost in the mind, and the final fifth row has a single dot. This figure is the same when viewed from the top or from the bottom. The first and fifth rows are identical, composed of the monad, which are both the source and the final termination. The second and fourth rows are also the same, but they are dual in their natures, either twofold or fourfold. The third row is shared by both the upright and the inverted Tetractes. This geometric figure may be turned so that any of its 6 points is uppermost, and it will have the same structure. These 6 points represent the 6 directions of space, which form pairs of opposites that are north-south, east-west, up-down. The inner circle of 6 dots about the central dot represent the 7 lords of the Old Ones, with Azathoth at the center of all. The inner and outer circles of 12 dots stand for the 12 blind gods that dance about the throne of Azathoth. The Hebrews have written of this in their Kabbalah, but obscurely to conceal it from the foolish. This star of 13 points is the true name of Azathoth, which has an articulation of sounds that can destroy the universe when rightly voiced. This is the seal of Azathoth, by which he is to be adored and petitioned. It differs from his sigil, which is also based upon the letters of his common name but is extracted from the magic square of the sun. This seal is built up from the primal letter glyphs in his common name and is the soul of that name. Use it in all works and rituals done in his name and by his authority. Azathoth is best invoked for works that fall under the authority of the sphere of the sun, such as works of integration and wholeness, of self-expression and self-awareness. The place in space naturally ruled by him is the center, which lies at the heart of the 6 directions. The Grimoire of Nyarlathotep. He who is the messenger and the soul of the blind archons who dance about the black throne of Azathoth is drawn to this earth because it is the fallen body of the goddess Barbalzoa, who cast herself from heaven into the starry pit of matter. He schemes and plots how to wipe our world clean of all material life, so that it may be elevated back to its original high estate. But he is powerless to act except at the capricious whims of mad Azathoth. He whispers his purposes into the ear of Azathoth, but sometimes the blind idiot god heeds, and to others he remains deaf. Even so, Nyarlathotep is the most potent of all the Old Ones. Before the fall, it had been his custom to sit on the right-hand side of the throne of Azathoth and execute the will of Azathoth on the cosmos. Now, Azathoth has no conscious will of his own, and Nyarlathotep follows his own purposes. He likes to walk up and down upon the earth in the form of a man, which he appropriated ages ago in ancient Egypt. The original soul of the pharaoh was consumed in his cold fire, and Nyarlathotep took up habitation in his shell of flesh, which he rendered deathless by means of his alchemy. It is within the power of Nyarlathotep to take on whatever shape or form he desires, and to move through the gateways of Yog-Sothoth freely. No world or dimension of reality is forbidden to him, yet no matter how wide his wanderings, he is drawn back always to this world in memory of the goddess who sleeps at its heart. When Azathoth pipes his music and the blind gods dance, Nyarlathotep must fulfill their purposes, for he is their messenger. He rebels against this servitude and seeks to bring about purposes of his own, for his advantage or amusement. Sometimes he succeeds, but sometimes he fails, for Azathoth is capricious in his madness. What man or god may know the song he will choose to play? Nyarlathotep is given power as messenger of the blind gods of creation over the gods of earth that have arisen from the desires and aspirations of mankind. The gods of earth are bound to the earth. They are formed from the dreams of Barbalzoa. She hears in her sleep the crying out of humanity for justice and truth, and her dreaming mind brings forth gods and goddesses that are. composed of these principles. She hears the groans of lust and the cries of war, and her dreaming mind shapes gods and goddesses of love or hate. All gods of earth are mere fancies of dreaming Babel Zoa, shadows of her sleepy thoughts. They arose in response to the yearnings of humanity, and to humanity and its needs they remain forever bound. Nyarlathotep resents these earthly deities and has gathered them together in a great throne room in the place known as Kadath in the Cold Waste. He keeps them as pets for his own amusement, and it is only with his approval that they are permitted to answer the prayers of mankind. In this way he seeks to make himself into a smaller image of Azathoth, for as Azathoth rules the cosmos and all its dimensions, so Nyarlathotep seeks to rule this world, which is the body of the dreaming goddess. He hates the gods of earth, for in them is a nobility and purity that he lacks within himself. They are powerless to resist him, and tremble at the sound of his footsteps. Of all the playthings Nyarlathotep has found upon this world, none amuses him more than the race of man. He is known among men as the crawling chaos, because his appearance is often followed by madness. Those who walk in deserts or through wildernesses by night sometimes meet this god and converse with him, never knowing with whom they spoke or how near they were to death. It is the caprice of Nyarlathotep to hold conversations with men or women when the mood strikes his fancy, and then he may impart to them arcane secrets of precious value. Yet if they approach him when he is angry, he will reach out his bony black hand and touch them upon the forehead, and their bodies will at once crumble to flakes of black dust as their souls are eaten by him. The god may be recognized by his black robes that are wrapped about his long and thin body. Often he walks the desert veiled, but those who have glimpsed behind the veil run mad and scream that he has no face. Yet he may put on any face he chooses as a mask, for none of them are his own. His true face was once carved upon the head of the great statue of Egypt, known as the Sphinx, before the pharaoh Khafre, in a fit of fury, commanded that it be struck off, and placed his own image on the head of the statue. It is whispered that the Order of the Sphinx preserves his true image in their subterranean vaults. Who can say, for those who venture beneath its tail never emerge? This is the seal of Nyarlathotep that is to be inscribed on all instruments and charms devoted to his service or worship. It is not to be confused with his sigil that is extracted from his name upon the magic square of Mercury. Both have power to attract the notice of the god, though neither will guarantee his wayward favor, which he sometimes extends to those who worship him or serve him, but sometimes withholds. Only the great seal of the old ones can compel him to obedience. Think long before you use it. Nyarlathotep never forgets an insult and never forgives. It is better to propitiate him with offerings and sacrifices and prayers of praise. Those he chooses to favor wax great in wealth and authority for a time. Eventually, the interest of the creeping chaos wanders, and he withdraws his favor and seeks other amusements, leaving them to their own fate. It is best to petition Nyarlathotep in matters that fall under the authority of the sphere of Mercury, for there is harmony between the affairs of this sphere and the nature of Nyarlathotep, who is a messenger for the dancing archons. The magic square of Mercury has power to attract his notice, as does his sigil formed on that square from his name. Nyarlathotep does not dwell in the sphere of Mercury. The length and breadth of the entire cosmos is his home, but he has a harmony with this sphere that may be used by practitioners of magic in their dealings with him. Of the six directions, that most in accord with this god is the depths, and this is as it should be, for he is called the Creeping Chaos. The Grimoire of Yog-Sothoth. The remaining of the three High Lords of the Archons is Yog-Sothoth, god of portals. He rules all goings in and all comings out. Doors are the mouth of Yog-Sothoth, and windows are his eyes. Whenever a threshold is crossed, this god is aware, and it can only be crossed when he permits it. He is both the gate and the key. None may pass through a portal that he has locked. He rules transitions between spheres and between worlds, and regulates them as he sees fit, according to his own sense of necessity that is conditioned by the changing patterns of the heavens. On certain festival dates the gates of Yog-Sothoth swing wide, but on other dates they remain shut. Chief among the openings is the festival known as May Eve, occurring on the final night of the month of April, and almost as potent for openings is the festival known as the Eve of All Hallows, occurring on the final night of the month of October. In addition to these mighty festivals, upon the spring and autumnal equinoxes, the separation between worlds becomes thin and easily crossed. At these dates in the Wheel of the Year, the gates of Yog-Sothoth may be opened by rites of worship, by sacrifices, and by the use of the long chant that is written in some lesser-known copies of the Necronomicon, for all earthly editions of this black book beneath the throne of Azathoth are imperfect copies, and all are incomplete. The symbol called the Head of the Dragon is potent in opening the gates of Yog-Sothoth, whatever kind they may be. But the symbol known as the Tail of the Dragon closes the gates and seals them shut against the transition of those things best kept on the other side. When a gate is opened, creatures who wait for just this chance attempt to force their way through. If they are quick, they may succeed. Be ever watchful for their lurkings and their advances. Do not be deceived by their blandishments and lies, for they use whatever trick offers itself if it will aid in their transitions. When a gate is passed, it is best to seal it shut by forming the Tail of the Dragon with a gesture of the right hand upon the air. Yog-Sothoth is vigilant against the greater outrages, but he may fail to notice the lesser outrages. Yog-Sothoth remains invisible except when he opens a gateway, and then he appears as a gathering of rotating iridescent spheres that intersect and overlap, their periods and proportions defining the conditions under which the gate was opened, and the place to which it leads, for those able to read them. Their harmonics are mathematical and musical. The opening of a gateway is not in the sounds of these turning spheres, nor in the silences between the sounds, but in the ever-shifting balance created between the sounds and the silences. Each circle is a world. Where they touch and overlap are gates. Such is the face of Yog-Sothoth, which is the face of the cosmos. When the soul of a man is liberated from his house of flesh and bone, which happens during dreams, and at those times when through some accident the soul is struck out by violent force and flies free, Nyarlathotep may lead the soul to any place or any world, even to the throne of chaos itself, but the creeping chaos is only able to act as guide with the sufferance of Yog-Sothoth, who may seal the gates against him if he so chooses. Yog-Sothoth cannot be bullied, not even by Nyarlathotep, and he can only be petitioned by rites and sacrifices on those dates and times that are conducive to the opening of the gates. When the stars conspire in their windings to deny transition, Yog-Sothoth must obey. Not even the long chant will move him at these unfavorable times. Use the seal of Yog-Sothoth to summon the god of portals. He is best called within a stone circle upon a high place, for he dwells in the upper firmament and descends through the spheres to approach the earth. His greatest harmony is with the sphere of the sun. He is therefore best petitioned by rites and sacrifices in matters that pertain to this sphere, and in all matters that require transition from one place or condition to another. The magic square of the sun has power in his rites. The direction of space that has greatest affinity for his nature is the heights, for he dwells in the upper regions. Remember, Nyarlathotep is the guide, but Yog-Sothoth is the gate. Physical travel between worlds is rare and fraught with danger. It is better to use the gates of this god to travel in the spirit, in a body of astral light. This can be done in dreams, or by the deliberate projection of the astral shell. Call upon Yog-Sothoth to open the gate, but on Nyarlathotep to lead the way. Those who pass through the gates in their physical shells seldom return, and if they do come back after the long passage of years, they often run mad. The Grimoire of Yig. Among the lesser lords of the Old Ones who do not dwell near the throne of chaos, but upon or near this fallen world that shields the dreaming goddess, Yig is the most distant and difficult to understand. Some sages deny that he is even one of the Old Ones, but if he is not of their pure blood, it is certain that he is of their fraternity, for Yig and the Old Ones have had dealings since the beginning of time. In the vast subterranean land of Kanyan, Yig is worshipped alongside Cthulhu, with equal reverence, by the alien race that dwells there. Yig is father to all serpents, and those of serpent kind, such as the salamanders and the dragons that dwell between the worlds, and are glimpsed by men but seldom. He can walk the earth unseen, but when he puts on form, it is that of a great serpent, or sometimes that of a man with the head of a snake. All lesser serpents bend to his will and do his bidding. He seldom speaks, but prefers to hiss in the voice of his many children. When he enters the body of a man and drives out his soul, the possessed man falls to the ground and writhes his limbs sinuously, making hissing sounds with his lips and flicking out his tongue to taste the air. It is within the power of Yig to breed with mortal women and engender hybrids in their wombs. This he does seldom, since there is little value in such servants who bear a form mostly human but lack intelligence and are mute. They writhe all their long lives on their naked bellies and prefer to lie curled up in dark places where they sleep and perchance dream the dreams of serpents. Their blood has virtue in prolonging the normal span of life, and it is for this reason alone that they are sought. Those who displease Yig by mocking him or by mistreating or slaying his sinuous children are killed by the bites of many serpents, or sometimes are driven mad by the visitation of the god himself. Yig knows the ancient secrets that lie hidden in cold and dark places at the edges of the world. He knows the ways that lead deep through the twisting bowels of the earth, and what forgotten things still dwell there. His memory is long, and he never forgets. He is the most ancient of the lesser lords, almost as old as Nyarlathotep himself. He favors those who do him worship, and enjoys the dancing and songs of his worshippers. Rhythmic drumming is the music best liked by Yig, and rhythmic chants are his preferred song. Those who adore him also adore his children and refrain from doing them harm, for every serpent, even the smallest and meekest, is mighty Yig himself in a form of flesh. Their eyes are his eyes, their teeth are his teeth. Use the seal of Yig to summon and propitiate the god with praise and pledges of service. He never sleeps, for his eyes never close, and he is always watchful. When called with proper rites and offerings, he will come. It is easy to win his friendship, but woe to him who chances to step upon a snake, for it is certain that Yig will punish him. The harmony of Yig is the sphere of Saturn, which is the most remote of the spheres of the heavens recognized in the ancient texts. Call upon this god in works that pertain to this distant sphere, such as matters of arcane wisdom, prudence, renewal, and long life. The magic square of Saturn is useful in his rites. It does not possess power over the god, but it resonates with the nature of the god and acts as a beacon inviting his approach. The direction of space most naturally in harmony with Yig is the gateway of the north. The Grimoire of Dagon. Dagon dwells in a deep rift below the waters of the Pacific Ocean. Like mighty Cthulhu, he is of vast size with a body as large as the largest of whales, but his nature is unlike that of the war god. Dagon delights in self-command and the attainment of arcane skills, and in the intricate working of metals and the crafting of jewels. He does not make war for sport, but only when it is necessary for the survival of his people. Long ages passed, before even Cthulhu and his spawn came to this world. Dagon and his spouse Hydra swam across the sea of space and took up their abode in the deep places of the oceans, where they erected their mighty cities of stone. The Elder Things did not molest them, for they committed no aggression against the Crinoid race and their Shoggoth slaves. The womb of Hydra is ever fertile and brought forth the sons and daughters of Dagon in their teeming myriads. They are like Dagon in shape and do not resemble Hydra, which no human eye has glimpsed, despite the legends that are told in her name. Manlike in body, they have webbed hands and feet, and heads that resemble those of a frog, joined to their shoulders with no neck, and having gill slits in their sides. Just as the spawn of Cthulhu resemble their father, but are smaller in size, so the children of Dagon resemble him, but are in size no larger than men. They are called the Deep Ones, and can live both in the depths of the ocean and in the air on land. The Deep Ones have long cohabited with human beings and sired hybrid offspring on their human wives. Men too can engender hybrids in the females of Dagon's children. They are in every way human when born, but as they age, they acquire the characteristic sloping brows, wide mouths, and broad noses of those born in unions between humans and Deep Ones. Their skin becomes gray in color and scaled. Gill slits open in the sides of their necks. Eventually, they leave the land and go to dwell in the deepest canyons on the ocean floor, where the cities of the Deep Ones are built. The cults of the Deep Ones among human beings worship both Father Dagon and Mother Hydra. Sacrifices are made to them of young men and women. They swear potent oaths to keep the secret of the Deep Ones forever and to serve them in all their works. In return, the Deep Ones give them gold and the treasures of the oceans and drive fish into their nets to feed them. This commerce between men and Deep Ones has been carried on for ages. In Lost Atlantis, the Deep Ones mated with the noble warrior class of that island kingdom and gave the people crystal weapons that emitted rays of light to destroy their enemies and enslave them. These weapons were the downfall of Atlantis, for the people grew arrogant and misused them during a civil war that destroyed Atlantis and sent it under the sea. Among the Deep Ones, there are those who still live and remember Atlantis, for they are deathless save by accident, poison, or deliberate violence. The native people of the Pacific Isles ward off the Deep Ones of Dagon with a symbol that they paint or inscribe on flat beach stones. It is abhorrent to the Deep Ones and their Great Father, and holds power over them. This symbol was created by the Elder Things in case of need, before they knew that Dagon and his children were peaceful and did not seek to make war against the Crinoid race. In appearance, it is much like the symbol known as the swastika, but with rounded arms, instead of arms that are bent at angles. No Deep One will cross a threshold that has this symbol upon it. No Deep One will follow a path that has this symbol lying in it. No Deep One will emerge from a beach that is strewn with stones bearing this sacred symbol. It represents the spiral chaotic vortex of Azathoth. Yog-Sothoth recognizes it and will not open any portal upon which it rests for the passage of the Sea Dwellers. All transitions are portals to Yog-Sothoth, even transition from the surf to the sand or progress upon a path. By this sign, those islanders who dwell near the cities of the Deep Ones are not molested by them while they are on the land, but when they venture into the waves, the Deep Ones exact a vengeance upon them. And for this reason, these islanders never swim off the beaches of their islands, or stand in the surf to fish along their reefs. By this seal, formed from the primal shapes of the letters in the Sea God's name, may Dagon be called and petitioned for favors. He is willing to give help to all who ask, but he demands service in return, and sometimes sacrifices. The Deep Ones are not only his children's children, but also his agents on both the seas and the land, who execute his judgments among mortals. Those who wed a Deep One are protected. Those who are born of the union between a human and a Deep One are protected. But those who betray the secrets of this race are pursued and punished. The sphere of the moon is in greatest accord with the nature of Dagon, which is inclined to dreams and visions and to artistic accomplishments. The god teaches skills for the curing of sickness and the prolonging of life, and skills for scrying into the future and into hidden matters. Actions that fall under the authority of the moon are suited for the invocation of Dagon and his race. The symbols of the moon lend themselves to use in his rites. Among the six directions of space, the way that is naturally given to Dagon is the west, that quarter of the world associated with the oceans.